SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races. Thanks to Mike Ferraro for visiting and appreciating Les Hewlett, 69. And I think we actually talked as well when it might have been when Fiorito was when Fiorito passed, or when Ray Lassesi passed. But Fiorito, I'm going to put up a link to the 1981 Whitney and his win that, considering we're going to do Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillandale, it kind of changed the course of, or at least contributed to the development of the New York Bred program. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Sid, I talked a little bit at the start of the show about the Good Magic and Irish War Cry retirements, and I thought it was an interesting story that transpired over the course of about 72 hours between Good Magic, who at first was seemingly going to get some time off, and then word came that he was retiring and was going to stand for next year at Hillandale. And the first thing that went in my head is, well, what's going to happen? You know, that gives Hillandale two Sons of Curlin. And then 2 days later, Irish War Cry's retired. But he, instead of going to Hillandale, has been, it seems, sold to Northview. And he will stand in Maryland instead. Your take on all of this?
Stud farms try to zero in on prospects early, Steve. Obviously, this happens more frequently now. And it always seemed that, for example, Good Magic was destined to go to stud at Hillandale because of the Stone Street ownership, and Stone Street, of course, majority owner of Curlin, and has a relationship with John Sakura, who has McLean's Music and Cantharos and other horses for the Stone Street operation. Of course, at one point, Irish War Cry was a Classics contender, Classics placed, in fact, and he looked, he also looked like he was going to go there. He may have gone there if he had won a grade one race, but with, the surprise early retirement of Good Magic, that was a horse with a bigger profile, a champion, obviously, he's going to stand for $30,000, and it probably wasn't going to be fair in Kentucky for Irish War Cry. So I don't know exactly what's happened with it, but big farms will sell pieces of horses to regional operations. Gervin, for example, is a case where he's going to stud next year, and he's at Ocala Stud. Ocala Stud, the ownership of Gervin, plus Airdrie Stud owns a piece of him. So you put these horses into regional programs, and if they hit, those big farms have the ability to reel them back into Kentucky if something happens. So many horses obviously have started off in regional markets and ended up in Kentucky. Kitty Zipp, for example, was in New York. And then when Gozapper came to the fore, Langdon was able to get him to Kentucky. Before that, from the New York area, you had Belong to Me, who came to Kentucky. Famous case from the Maryland area where Irish War Cry is going is Malibu Moon, who started off for, you know, $3,000 at Country Life and became a big stallion at, well, he made his name out there, and then he was brought to Kentucky and then ended up at Spencer Farm, which does the same type of thing, Steve. They're a huge stallion operation, and they farm out stallions to regional areas. So I would suspect that that's the type of situation we have here.
When you look at the two of them, and you know the race record, obviously, when you have a champion and a Breeders' Cup winner, and the kind of exploits that Good Magic amassed, yeah, there's the certain cachet there. But when you look at the two of them, I mean, physically, right. Talk about the highlights or the merits of the two, and what difference, if any, when we look at the female family, Sid, what denotes, you know, where somebody might go? Because obviously, I mean, nothing wrong with a $30,000 fee that Good Magic is starting out, but the case probably could be made that, you know, that there's also going to be a bargain price associated early on here in Maryland with Irish War Cry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. A lot of race record, obviously, with Irish War Cry. Of course, his pedigree is a little more up close, regionally populated, because Mr. Tommaso De Tommaso is a mid-Atlantic breeder, and particularly in this female family, she took a shot when Curlin was at his lowest fee, and bred the mare to Curlin and got a really good racehorse. Curlin, as a brand, is pretty big, Steve. He, obviously, he's a premier stallion. He stands for $150,000 at Hillendale. Got a lot of sons in Kentucky as it is right now. I mean, he's got Exaggerator, stands for $30,000 at Windstar. Exaggerator, obviously a Preakness winner. He's got, you know, the Travelers winner, Keen Ice at Calumet. He's got Connect at Lane's End for $20,000. Got Palace Malice, the Belmont Stakes winner at Three Chimneys. So there's a lot of high-powered Curlin sons already in Kentucky. So it makes a lot of sense to have Irish War Cry in the Mid-Atlantic. He's a great-looking horse. Of course, Good Magic was a very expensive yearling, but Irish War Cry is a really attractive horse. Doesn't, you know, like I said, his pedigree goes back to Federico Tessio, but it's not a huge commercial pedigree, but it's the type of pedigree that's going to put him in a stud fee range that's really going to make him attractive. And I think he's going to be, you know, one of those horses in the region that's really going to dominate in terms of attracting mares. So I think that's a really smart play on their part. You know, there are a lot of horses by Curlin, actually, that have been farmed out to regional areas. In fact, Stone Street has Jess's Dream, for example, the Curlin out of Rachel Alexandra, at Ocala Stud for $5,000. And in Florida, you have that good Curlin, who was on the Triple Crown Trail for a while. Ocean Knight, he's down in Florida. In New York, you've got at Sequel Stallions, another Stone Street connected horse, Union Jackson, for $5,000. So, you know, you've got a lot of young sons going to stud, and all of these horses have the potential at some point to be drawn in to Kentucky if they hit. It's a big male line. It's the male line of Mr. Prospector, Smart Strike, Curlin, and then his son. So it's a really vibrant male line. Lots of male stakes winners, which means, you know, usually, Steve, what happens is that's a sign of you know, what's going to come. We're going to see a kind of an explosion of this branch of Mr. Prospector because of Curlin. And this is also the same branch of Mr. Prospector, that Smart Strike branch, that's also responsible for looking at Lucky. You know, he's going to have a shot now with Accelerate at Lane's End. And English Channel, you know, it's a branch that's going to get a lot of play, but mostly led through Curlin and the sheer volume of his sons going to stud. So, you know, breeding is like a kaleidoscope. There's a finite number of permutations, but every time you shake it, you're going to get a different picture, and you can just see the picture kind of right now as we project into the future with all these Curlin sons. You're going to see a real regeneration of Mr. Prospector down the future, because say there's always 20,000 foals born a year, and for the sake of example, just say that that trend remains the same. Well, now within that trend, you're increasing the number of stallions by this line in it, which means there's going to be a corresponding decrease of other lines as this line increases, and that's the different shape we're going to start to see down the road. So in a way, it's a regeneration of this branch of Mr. Prospector.
I'd love for you to compare the female families and flesh them out a little bit more, because Irish War Cry, it seems, Sid, looking at you know, the two of them, there's a lot of interesting notes, and actually there's a lot of parallels between the female families, but the presence of Irish Sovereign's Dam, Irish Genius, a daughter of Beau Genius, and the, you know, the presence of Boldnesian in there, looking at the female family, St. Crispin, who was an ARC winner, in here. There's some outstanding depth for route going and for turf. I mean, it feels like Irish War Cry, and this is something that, in fact, I even discussed at times with Graham Motion, that, you know, that there was plenty of potential for Irish War Cry on the grass, should that have, you know, become an opportunity. But that bottom side has got, you know, some real important elements to it, and you know, Polish Numbers, the Dam of Irish Sovereign, there's Danzig in there. This is a pretty clean in terms of inbreeding. Only Northern Dancer, 5x4. But otherwise, it feels like there's a lot of markers in Irish War Cry's page that could get picked up.
Well, you know, you point out an interesting thing, because the female family, as we've noted, is fairly European. You go to his third dam, Irish Trip by St. Crespin, was you know, bred abroad, as were everything else behind it. So the next dam is by Tambourine. I mean, it goes, you know, the next dam is by Nimbus, and then it gets to Tessio, Federico Tessio, the great Italian breeder, the breeder of Rebo and Niarco. Well, it goes all the way back to one of his foundation mares. There's a lot of turf, as you pointed out, in the pedigree. There's also a lot of there's a lot of other markers that point to some successful outcomes, and one of them is the fact that he's bred on the cross of Smart Strike with Danzig. Now, this is the same cross that Looking at Lucky has. You know, he's a Smart Strike out of a Danzig line, and you see the success he's had as a stallion. You also see the success he's also had on turf as well. You know, you throw the Danzig part into that, and that also adds a turf feel to it as well. He's got a pedigree that's really built to, you know, on these structural tire markers that we're talking about, show a lot. And if he does have that turf, as you said, that's going to be something that's pretty desirable for breeders right now because there's so much turf racing. Of course, he's by Curlin. Curlin was tried on the turf. There was at one point, Curlin was going to be aimed at the Arc. You know, he ran well on the turf, but of course he was, you know, a superb dirt runner. But there are a lot of things you can do with Irish War Cry's pedigree that could increase your chances for success, because one of the very, as you pointed out, there's little inbreeding in this. There's an outcross, pretty much. One of the successful elements to breeding to Smart Strike, and particularly Curlin, has been the inbreeding to Deputy Minister. So this horse has a pedigree where, of course, Curlin is out of a Deputy Minister mare. So breeding a mare that has Deputy Minister to Irish War Cry will get you that that inbreeding element to Deputy Minister that you want. So that's another kind of roadmap to approaching Irish War Cry as well. So that's his pedigree. Now, if you were to look at Good Magic, of course, we mentioned this was a very expensive colt as a yearling, and Stone Street bred him, bought back into him. He was a $1 million yearling. He has, as you pointed out, very strong similarities on the sire line cross. And I'll show you what they are. He's by Curlin out of a hard spun mare, son of Danzig. Irish War Cry was by Curlin out of a mare by Polish Numbers, the son of Danzig. Both bred on that exact cross we were just talking about.
You know,
so imagine. Yeah, go ahead.
A quick note. When you mentioned Polish Numbers, he stood at Northview, which could explain their pursuit of Irish War Cry.
Right. And as you'll note in the female family of Irish War Cry, there are a lot of, you know, the stakes winners from that family are by some Northview stallions as well. He's got a female family, a recent female family of stakes winners from Mr. Tommaso that are from that region. There's a lot of appeal. But both these horses bred on the identical cross, and both available to be fortified by Deputy Minister, former due process horse, whose presence on the bottom side of pedigrees has been absolutely phenomenal, especially with the inbreeding. When frequently, Steve, when we're analyzing pedigrees and we're doing pedigree matings and stuff, especially with the Curlin sires, we actually look now to see, we look for deputy minister inbreeding because that's become a really positive element to breeding to Curlin. But on its own, deputy minister inbreeding has been successful as just a general part of pedigree structure. Sometimes you find certain things that seem to strengthen pedigrees, and though deputy minister, of course, he's represented as a stallion and a sire line by Awesome Again, Ghost Zapper, or so forth, his real strength is showing on the bottom sides of pedigrees. And, Keen Ice, for example, is inbred to, he's by Curlin, he's inbred to deputy minister. Curalina, another G1 winner by Curlin, is inbred to deputy minister. She was out of a Graham Hall mare. Keen Ice was out of an Awesome Again mare. Vino Rosso is also inbred to deputy minister. You can see when Tanya Gunther was planning that mating, she probably looked at that inbreeding as a positive sign. She's inbred 3x4 to deputy minister through Touch Gold. When people are actually planning matings, these are some of the things that that they'll consider. And both these stallions are available for that, which makes it better, for example, than a stallion that is already out of a deputy minister line mare or has deputy minister in the family, so that there's already a cross. Like Keen Ice, for example, at Calumet, you wouldn't necessarily now look for bringing more deputy minister in because that would lead to three crosses. So he doesn't afford the breeder that opportunity, whereas these two do. And that's an interesting part of both of their pedigrees as well.
Good magic to Hill and Dale and Irish War Cry off to Northview, and wish them both the best of luck. I really had tremendous fun, and anybody that had been listening to the show for any length of time knew that even before Irish War Cry came along, I was always noting for people and directing people to the horses of Mrs. De Tomaso and her sister Hope Jones.
Just yes, you were.
Being the daughters of Amory Haskell, and it felt like they had their breeding their respective breeding programs, and they'll buy horses here and there too, but they were clearly reaching a peak with their programs, and it was really special. And I know, I'm sure, a disappointment that Irish War Cry didn't perform to their hopes when it came to the Haskell itself, but it brought Mrs. De Tomaso on a wonderful ride, and niece Ellie Glockham, who has represented them and has basically handled a lot of the media attention, and Mrs. De Tomaso spends more than half the year in Italy, but it really was a wonderful episode for the industry, frankly.
It really was. Yeah.
That I thought was particularly notable, that to remind everyone the heritage of the game, and it was really fun to follow the story and to see and spend time when the occasions arose. So certainly hope
Absolutely.
That they'll meet with success in the breeding shed. Sid, also we should put the finishing touches on the sale. After we spoke, we thought things were going to, you know, taper off a little, but no, they didn't taper off. They barnstormed right through Sunday. Some final thoughts about what the September sale did for the marketplace and how it bodes going forward.
Sure. Before I get to that, I wanted to tie the ribbon around what Sure. we were talking about with Smart Strike, Danzig Cross that these two horses have, and we just mentioned the introduction of Deputy Minister. The top older horse this year, Accelerate, is by looking at Lucky, who's by Smart Strike out of a Danzig mare, so he's bred on that same thing as we were talking about with these two. If you note, he's out of an Awesome Again mare by Deputy Minister. So he himself is a part of that cross that these two stallions will avail themselves to by bringing Deputy Minister to them. So that kind of highlights exactly what we were talking about. Getting to the sale, it went all the way to the end, Steve. It was the, the fourth best sale Keeneland has had. And interestingly, it's the fourth best sale following the sales of 2005, 2006, 2007. 2008 was the economic collapse in 10 years, and then suddenly we've gone back up to the same region as before the 2008 collapse. So there are some ramifications to that. The industry's kind of been rejiggered since that period, but we're reaching the same number in terms of volume and prices. So that's an interesting development. The top is obviously massive again. You know, what was it like, $24 million yearlings this year, which was, you know, quite a bit more than last year. I think there were 13. And prices all throughout, even though the median had declined from 57,000 last year to 50, though the average went up. Overall, the selling was pretty strong. And I know a lot of people who actually bought horses back at fairly stiff prices just because more people are willing now to take those horses that are pretty nice horses and not give them away at cheaper prices. So obviously the biggest example of that was Justified's Half Brother by Will Take Charge to the Gunthers, who R&A'd him at pretty stiff price. But I've seen this kind of throughout the sale, even at $200,000-$300,000 level, even lower. That's a sign that some people are real. You know, it's been a bull market essentially. There are some elements to this that, in the overall macro picture, that need to be followed. And the one guy that's actually been that's written about him, I met him at the September sale, Chris McGraw of the TDN, English writer who's been hired by them, and he's been doing an excellent job. He's repeatedly noted, Steve, that while he's writing about the success of these sales and the economy in general, he's actually noted several times in his pieces that I actually pointed it out to him, that I said, man, you're the only one who's really noted this in all the sales coverage I've read. But he's actually noted the economy now from 2008, say, to 2018 is working on a different plane than it was up until the crash of 2008. And the notable thing is that it's obviously been fueled by central banks across the world. The international central banks have, to simplify it, they just created wealth in terms of created money that has allowed them to plow it into the stock market, increasing stock prices. So right now, more than ever, the easing, which was originally planned as a international policy to help economies get back on their feet, have actually been have never ceased. These policies have not ceased, and central banks have continued to fuel this by lower interest rates and even negative interest rates, which is essentially a situation of giving money and saying, here, we'll pay you interest also to take the money. So essentially, you have a lot of money and wealth in the stock market that's been created by central banks. And so a note of general warning is that you know, every bull run does have hiccups and perhaps bubble bursting, and that's something to keep in mind too as we ponder the future.
Now we look to the next round, and there's going to be the most interesting thing, Sid, I think, in this aftermath. There's got to be outfits that got turned away, that didn't, you know, fill their orders. Basically, there's pinhookers that are going to need horses yet, and you know, the push down effect that into the middle market and even the lower end. This was healthy, and we'll see how long it can last. That's a separate topic, but right. For now, things seem very good, and we also, you know, keep wondering aloud about how many, you know, mares might get put into production with all of this happening. I mean, that I would be very interested to see over the next, you know, call it, you know, what, 5 months, basically, September, mm-hmm. October, November, December, January, February, really 6 months into the start of breeding season. Watch for filly and mare races, for claiming races, and you're going to see, you're going to see a lot of activity. People looking, they're going to need mares. You know, you last week went over this very big list of stallions that are, you know, that are going to go into right. service in 2019. Yeah. Well, they're going to need mares, and so it will not be surprising to see mares glommed here in coming months.
And interestingly, if you look at Coolmore's fees for next year, which they were one of the first to release them, realistic fees and you know, Justify is entering instead at 150, which is lower than what they had for American Pharoah. And it's going to really mean that Justify is going to be absolutely swamped with applications, and they're going to be able to really control that book for quality. If you look at what happened at the sale. American Pharoah was the star of the sale in a lot of ways. And, you know, that's a pretty good move on their part to handle it this way. The price of metal at a lower price than what AP had entered, Stud.
Yeah.
On the heels of the tremendous success of AP, you know. Ordinarily, you think that a farm would make it even higher based on the fact that, wow, look at how American Pharoah is selling and whatnot. But they have done a very smart thing by pricing him at a lower fee. The ability to, you know, get the right types of mares and really control his book even more.
I happened to have Baffert on Monday, and we went actually past the top of the hour, so I ran the complete interview yesterday again, and I happened to use the opportunity with him to mention the Justify stud fee, and he immediately said that's a tremendous bargain. He said he's you know, going to pick up right where Scat Daddy left off, and that he gushed about what an opportunity it is for breeders.
Yeah, no, that is. The real problem is going to be able to get into his book now. You know, when American Pharoah was 200, that was stiff, and for selected breeders, they did that other deal where you could submit another mare as well. This is going to make, you know, it very difficult to get in unless you have a really high-quality mare. And that's part of how you really make stallions, because in this age of big books, what had really watered down performance is size, quantity. You know, in a different era, for example, across the board, what were considered really good stats for sires were these. 80% starters from foals, 60% winners from foals, say 20% two-year-old winners from foals, and 10% stakes winners from foals. Well, when they started to increase books, you couldn't get anywhere near those stats. So one of the subtle changes that occurred in advertising, and then this was put into the to the media, and people started doing winners from starters instead of winners from foals, and you know stakes winners from starters, and really, really making the comparison a different comparison altogether, and that's become now an acceptable thing for people to do. But if you're in the business of this tracking the stuff as I am, we still look at the real, you know, real stats based on what they've done from the entire group. And what's happened with larger books, Steve, is that 10% stakes winners from foals stat that I talked to you about before and that I mentioned, what's happened in the case of big books is it's dropped down to 5%. In the old days, 10% was good, and 18%, 19%, 20% stakes winners to foals. Now that's keep that in mind. That was the region in which horses like Northern Dancer and Danzig moved in, really rarefied air. To be able to get, you know, over 15% stakes winners out of foals was just, you know, that was your elite stallion. These days, an elite stallion gets you 8, 9, 10% stakes winners from the foals. Why? Because larger books meant you couldn't control for quality. Imagine, you know, a book of, say, 50 mares, you know, you're going to get the top 50 mares to that stallion, right? When you expand that book to 200, there's no way to get the next 150 to be of that quality of that first 50. So quality dropped off, and all the stats follow. Now with the way they've priced Justify in this case, at 150, that brings him into an area for his range, for his type of horse, that is going to be able to compete with all the top horses in Kentucky, and he's going to be able to draw away a larger percentage of horses that might have gone to the Tappets, the Warfronts, the Curlins. It's a very shrewd move. And like I said, a shrewd move coming off the success of American Pharoah. So Coolmore has actually shown what a Triple Crown winner's first yearlings can bring. And then they've gone in and taken their next Triple Crown winner and reduced the fee, siphon even better mares to them, at least to be able to hand-pick better, a better book. That's something to keep in mind, that his first book is going to be absolutely tremendous.
Hmm. Well, certainly a strong fortnight at Keeneland, and we'll keep an eye on the next round. We've got quite a bit to do yet before the bloodstock sales in November, but Sid, we'll keep tracking it, and we appreciate, as always, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we inch closer with each passing week to the 2019 breeding season, and you got decisions to make. Work with Sid, work Thoroughbred Consultants. WERK, of course, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111, and broodmare compatibility analysis, and it'll work with you on your goals and your aspirations, breed to race, breed to sell, whatever, you know, interest you've got, and wherever you are in the country. So, Sid, as always, appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I'll look forward to speaking next week.
Well, we'll have lots. We'll have the two-year-old racing to talk about as we arc toward Breeders' Cup. And, of course, Sid's got a strong Breeders' Cup record, as well as with the Triple Crown. We always have a lot of fun leading in. And the handicap division. Going to get some of those turns between the Lucas Classic at Churchill on Saturday, the Jockey Club Gold Cup in New York, and the Awesome Again in California. Things will start to crystallize, and we hope you're crystallizing your breeding plans with Sid. We'll take a break here, a little past the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, Norm McKnight, who I've wanted to talk to for ages, and Norm McKnight is a terrific story. Originally, those of you certainly in Canada, and those of you that knew Harness, you knew Norm McKnight long before he came to the Thoroughbred side of things, and then once he did, it's been a steady climb. And Norm McKnight, a couple of recent stake winners the last couple of weeks, two-year-old at Woodbine over the weekend, and the week before, very, very notable what he's done with Decorated Soldier, and they won the Presque Mile with our favorite guy, Willie Martinez. Norm McKnight's going to join us when we come back. Seth Merrow afterward, and we'll handicap the pick six sequence at Belmont. Scratches I just circulated. Andy, always helpful in this front. And I don't know. I don't know if it worked out the way we planned it, per se, but the race that we entered MTO, Field of Five, turned out. Bruce Brown going to be very tough with She's Delightful in there in the eighth race in the feature. So we'll see about, I don't know if there's going to be enough pace for Carlisle Bell with what's left in here. She'll usually, at short distance, she'll trail a little bit early. Hopefully she can pick up some pieces. The other races off the turf, you got five left in the fifth race, and you've got five in the seventh. So the pick six should be very approachable. When it's, I didn't finish putting tickets together because I wanted to wait for the scratches. So now that they're together, Seth and I will work on it with you in hour three. But Norm McKnight, next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo and Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Been beat up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Reputations changeable, situations tolerable. Baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
We're back at the races. We can take a couple of minutes. We'll get Norm McKnight. He's tied up for a minute, but looking forward to talking to him. So we'll get him in just a little bit. His story has origins, tragically, and with a barn fire that wiped out his standardbred operation, and he had an owner that was interested in thoroughbred, and next thing you know, he started training. And that goes back. That's got to be 20 years ago, give or take. We'll get some of those details. The little bits and pieces you pick up. But McKnight was a driver too. He didn't just train. He drove as well. And last year he won the training title at Woodbine last year. In a bit of an upset. No upset last week when it came to the Lonesome Glory, because Zangebeel and the track toward Far Hills and the Eclipse Award this year seems the path seems pretty clear, and I've been wanting to get to Ricky Hendricks. I should have had him on after the Turf Riders Cup at Saratoga, but happy to get him on now. Ricky, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You know, he had the most consistent form coming into the Lonesome Glory last week, and especially after last year, where it was such a muddled picture amongst the the top tier steeplechase horses. He really has now at this point, he's the leader in the clubhouse.
Well, thank you. He's been a fun horse to train, and I've kind of forgot how good his form was, so it came out before the Belmont race, and I was like, wow, this horse is really, he hasn't done much wrong. He's had a great go, and appreciate Gordon Elliott bringing him over last year and selling him to our owners. We're very lucky.
Well, you obviously have had a lot to, a big part of this. And let's talk about, about Rose Bryan and, how these kinds of deals happen and, the opportunity, to pick them out and then campaign them.
Yes, it was very lucky. I'm friends with Gordon Elliott, and the horse came over to our stable before he ran last year at Far Hills. And we schooled him a couple times over our jumps, and he was in a very competitive race last year. He was in the novice race at Far Hills, and I had a talk with my owner, George Mahoney, Ross Bryan Farm, and he said, look, what's a horse worth? I said, he's worth, let's watch the horse run, and then if he wins that race, just buy him. Because it was so competitive, the race. And luckily, after the race, Gordon's good friends with George. George has horses over in Ireland with Gordon, and we were fortunate enough to be able to get the horse.
Well, and in fact, on going back to Thursday, there was a Clark Ham, right, that was one of those, was one of the Elliott-trained
yes.
Mahoney.
Yes, yes, Clark Ham is he was coming over to the Turf Riders to run, and the owners were kind of a little shaky coming over. And George said, Gordon had a conversation with George, and George is like, "Fine, we'll take the horse." And that's kind of how that happened. And he will run at Far Hills as well for Gordon, and then we will take over the horse after Far Hills.
Well, this is Rick. This is a pretty good system.
Yes, <for you. laughs> knock on wood, the system's working, and let's not mess with it. Yes.
For one of the things about Zangibeal, and frankly, one of the things that I'm sensing at this point so far, almost the end of the steeplechase season, there's been some exciting additions to the landscape. I mean, he's a 5-year-old, this gelding, and there's the opportunity for him to be around for years to come.
I sure hope so. Knock on wood. I hope he is. He's a lovely horse to work with. He's dead easy, no problems, no quirks. He just goes out and trains, and he's a pleasure to train.
The adjustment from the particularly the Irish and the British jump circuit and the season, the horses that come over when they when they come here, obviously the racetrack circuit and the the hunt meet circuit, different kinds of courses. He has been seemingly, especially winning at Far Hills, but then coming back and winning at Saratoga, that says a lot about him, that he's versatile, that he can adjust to the fast, really speed is at a premium on the flat. Talk about him from that standpoint and the general approach when it comes to getting a horse and having them move interchangeably between the hunt courses and the flat tracks.
Yes, that was a big concern going into the race, and we kind of went into the race Lonesome Glory with the thought of, you know, he was going to probably need a race coming off a layoff. Was the racetrack going to suit him? We're not sure. We thought he was more suited to the hunt meets, you know, up and down the hills, longer distance. He was just coming off of winning a 3-mile race in May, which was a big ask of him, and he ran very well. And then we gave him some time off, and then we're headed to, you know, the goal is Far Hills, and then we backed up and tried to use Lonesome Glory as a prep race, and he really surprised us, and he really had a good turn of foot. He finished up with a real good turn of foot.
Well, having won the Iroquois, now adding the Lonesome Glory and heading to Far Hills in October, and with him having, you know, won the Foxbrook already, it just feels like he's in great shape. And I suppose, I mean, you had Optimus Prime as well, you know, that came into this, finished a good third. I mean, this was a particularly fun running of the Lonesome Glory, and to have three horses, really to have, you know, the best horses in the race kind of grouped at the finish in that extended run to the wire. But, you know, you really have dominated here through the summer.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We're very fortunate to have some very nice horses in the barn right now, and it's just been it's a lot of fun.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because I've not had a chance to talk to you, Ricky, and you know, you go back. I mean, these are all races that you've won. You won the Turf Riders with Trey Touche. You won the Iroquois with him as well. I mean, he had been you actually won the Foxbrook with him as well.
Yeah.
That was the big horse. It really feels like Zanjabil may be on the verge of that kind of a run.
I sure hope so. Yes, it's fun to have some good horses again. Trey Touche was a special horse, and Zanjabil's he's headed that way too, I think.
He was by poles apart, a stallion I've never heard of.
Yes.
To be honest.
Yes, he stood. Yes, it was. He was actually the owner, Malcolm Comer, bought Trey Touche as a weanling. So he was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet. You know, he was little. And I'm like, he was real big on the breeding. And I'm not sure, you know, how he picked them out, to tell you the truth. But he was by poles apart, and we had his brothers and sisters, and none of them were actually very good. And Trey Touche, he was just a very determined horse.
He actually started his career in Jersey too, Garden State, and he broke his maiden at Atlantic City, which is
wow.
Pretty great.
Yes, Nick Santagata rode him. Yes.
Oh my
really
God.
You really did your homework. Yeah, good for you. See? Yes. Yeah,
I love
one
it.
Time I ran him for 25,000 one time at Colonial Downs off the turf. He needed a race to get ready for, I can't remember which race. And you talk about sweating bullets. Oh my gosh, was I nervous. Yeah.
But he finished third that day, didn't he? I'm just looking at the PPs.
Yes, he did. Yes. Yes, I was very, very nervous, and then he turned out to be a wonderful horse. He was just unlucky not to be the champion 3-year-old one year. He ran over the beacon going to the last fence. He was way in front, and it was one of those things. And it's tough to swallow sometimes, but it happens.
Well, and you know, that was the point in his career where you were transitioning him toward jumping, and in fact. He broke his maiden in the Gladstone.
Yes, he did. Yes, as a 3-year-old. Yep, correct.
So this was a horse. I mean, you knew from early on that I mean, the flat career was just a formality to get him used to racing.
Yes, it was. Yes, we always had in mind to make him a steeplechase horse and to run him as a 3-year-old. Yes.
You know, it's funny too, Ricky. We had a conversation at Saratoga with Bill Gallo, and Joe Etchison's name came up, and I do see that, and I said to Bill, why is there not a race for Atchison? And he said, you know, we really should. But going back to 2001, there was a at Pimlico, and he participated, yes. Trey Touche, in the Atchison Hurdle Stake, which was a grade one at the time.
Yes, it was. Yeah, we had three novice grade ones, which was a wonderful idea. They had one at Churchill Downs. It was week leading into the, was just a couple, I think they ran it on a couple, just a couple days before each of the Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont. So that was a lot of fun when we did that. They were big races, $100,000 grade one stakes. It was great.
Well, he was for an extended period, and now I know the backstory. I love learning about these. I mean, we talked quite a bit last week about about Lonesome Glory himself and his extended run. I mean, 7 years and trips to Cheltenham and the remarkable success. I mean, you want to talk about a war horse. What the jumpers do, and when they, when they come back from injury, they're remarkable, and it just feels like Zangerbeel is really on that kind of an arc, to come and win this race against this field, off the layoff, last seen at Nashville, winning the Iroquois, says a lot about him and about your training. I mean, how does he stand up in terms of, in terms of physical and how much racing, he ran three times in the spring.
Yes. Yes. Actually we ran him, the goal, we took him to Camden early, down to the Camden Training Center and trained him right there in Camden, getting him ready for the Colonial Cup, which they have in the spring now. And he ran well. He finished second. The winner kind of, when they started the race, the winner opened up like 20 lengths right away. I don't know, the race kind of fell apart after they jumped the first fence. Everybody else was just kind of like playing catch up. He ran great. He finished second. Ross came back, and when he got off the horse, we were talking. He's like, look, Camden's a flat course. It's kind of like a racetrack type of environment, flat track, and it's fast, the speed. And he's like, look, my honest opinion is I don't think this horse is a Saratoga horse. And George and I are like, well, that's fine. We'll just, we'll take a different route then. So then we decided to go to Middleburg. He ran well again. He finished second, fast closing second. He was carrying a bit of weight. And he made a little bit of a jumping mistake at the fourth last fence, and he lost his position. And the winner snuck in front of him, so he was playing catch-up. And he ran a great race. He ran good. He finished second. And then we were like, okay, that's great. Now what? And then we were like, well, let's take a look at the Iroquois and see how it looks. And it came up a fairly light field, six or eight runners, I think. And, we're like, okay, the horse is training great. Let's go for it. And he just ran unbelievable race that day for a 5-year-old to run 3 miles with, I think it was 158 pounds on him. They were at equal weights. He just ran Ross gave him a beautiful ride, and he just ran a great race. It was really exciting.
Well, you can now prepare for Far Hills and the Grand National, and always a nice addition to a resume, Ricky.
Oh man, yes, it's going to be exciting. We'll be nervous. He went out and he trained this morning. My girlfriend Eve, she rode him. I asked her, oh, how's he feel? Oh, he's great. Well, yep, seems fine. He seems good. It turned out this morning he was full of mud. He just seems happy.
Well, and you sound happy too, and I'm sure that Mr. Mahoney's happy. Are you running this weekend? Are you at Shawan this weekend?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have four horses entered for Shawan on Saturday.
Very nice. And of course, not that the next few stops on the circuit are insignificant, because there's plenty of important racing between now and Far Hills, but everything will build up to getting down to New Jersey. I'm looking forward, as always. Hope we get good weather. On that topic, how is Zangerbeil, the footing? Any preference for him?
I wouldn't think he would like it too soft, but he would just like it, you know, I think the Belmont footing was ideal for him. It wasn't too firm. It was just a nice, very nice. Obviously, the course was in terrific shape, and we're very lucky to run there. And I thought the going was perfect for him.
Well, things are going awfully well, because in addition to Thursday's win, I see that Special Highs broke the maiden at High Hope as well on Sunday.
Well, thank you. Yes, we're having a good run. We're really enjoying it. And yeah, Special Highs ran a very good race. We were happy with him.
Well, Ricky Hendricks, I'm delighted to have you join us. And Zangerbeil absolutely seems to have put a hammer lock on the Eclipse, and we'll look forward to seeing you at Far Hills. Good luck in the weeks in between, and well done.
Thank you very much.
Glory. You got it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Not at all. Ricky Hendricks, everybody, and Rick has... It's notable that this level of horse, comparing it back to, that's why I brought up Trey Touche and his exploits, because this is clearly the best that he's had since Trey Touche. And I thought to pull up the High Hope results, and there he was too, Special Eyes with Ross Garrity. Leslie Young, a winner as well on Sunday in the maiden hurdle for Ballybristol. That was with Al-Shaba under Kieran Norris. Jack Fisher and Woods Lane won with Pick'em in the Oxmoor, and with Sean McDermott and Bernie Dalton and Kate, while Dynaformer won the other division of the Oxmoor. Bill had said that they had split. And you also had the J. Trump Novice Timber Race. Neil Morris sending out Formidable Heart with Darren Nagel for Tom Hulfish. And there was also actually the Ned Bonney, which was a training race. And you're no better. Stephanie Moore. And she owns as well. And this was the race that Joe Sharp had the horse in, Lovenskall. And by the way, speaking of Leslie Young, got to get tomorrow. I'll get to the real Ryder Cup from Sunday, and of course it was a rough, obviously weather wise, having sat in at the link and having sat in the rain all most of the afternoon. I'm expecting up at Unionville that they also took the worst of it, but. I know I saw some pictures, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gabby Gaudet may have won her division, but we'll get to the real Ryder Cup results. We had that nice conversation with Maggie Kimmett ahead of things, and also there's a lead up coming toward the Thoroughbred Makeover as well. Next weekend. So, over the jumps and off the track, Thoroughbreds getting it done in all different capacities. We'll take a break here just past the top of the hour. Now we'll get to Norm McKnight. I'm glad I had the window to get Ricky Hendricks, get a visit in with him to talk about the Lonesome Glory and Zangerbeil and more. And then Seth Merrill, round out the Wednesday edition at the races. Back after this with Norm McKnight.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.